Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is going to be fun because our next guest has been described as one of the best teachers of improvisation in America today.
Oh my goodness.
His name's Joe Bill. Joe first practiced improv, making up theatre on the spot with no lines, back in 1977.
It's true. I was a young lad, and now it's 47 years later.
It's 47 years later.
And I still have the mental agility, though it's waning every day, to make things up.
So I'm just going to throw out the rest of my introduction script.
Sure.
And ask you about what I think is the seventh question in my list of questions.
Let's
which is,
ahead.
You taught improv skills to the CIA.
Ha ha! Yes, I did. Not under the guise of improv skills, but it was thinking on your feet, and really the nefarious application is storytelling.
Right.
And so if you think about CIA and improvised storytelling,
of course,
that just takes you right into a Tom Clancy novel, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's and it was very weird because you go to a campus and you stay there. And when I got in my room, I was checking my lamps and I was checking, you know, where's the bug? There's something's watching me. And they didn't let you. They were just, you could tell there was a presence there. And so I didn't even know that these were truly the people who they said they were. So
Jay.
It's weird. Yeah, it's very weird.
How did you go about it? How did you go about teaching them these, well, or at least maybe as teaching, maybe not quite the right word, sort of?
I'd say facilitating.
Facilitating,
more
yeah.
than teaching. I mean, it's, you know, if we're slightly cynical, and we are, and by we, I mean I, yeah. assume
the royal we.
The royal we, yes. Yeah. It's to infuse some of your own personal thoughts, feelings, ideas, the internal stuff inside of a story when you're sharing it, as opposed to just circumstances with the person that you're speaking to. They wouldn't tell us who their audience might be, but the idea, it's sort of a mixture of leadership and sharing your authentic personal self, which is a gas. If you think about sharing your authentic self as a CIA.
If you're a spy or a CIA agent. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I suppose then it's like, who are you? You know.
Sure.
You might be a character. You might be, you are being all sorts of things to all sorts of people in all sorts of situations.
Yeah, it's true. And there are certain tells, which I'm sure they're more educated on than I. Just, you know, eye contact, speak up, make sure you finish a sentence with authority and authenticity. What am I doing here? I'm an actor. You're plotting to take down dictators or something. But no, they would – some people were like, we're the head of the groundskeeping crew, or they seem suspiciously banal.
I mean, that being said, though, you know, you say I'm just an actor, which – so I have a friend who – studied acting in the UK for a long time at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And when he came back, I hadn't seen him for many years, 5 or 6 years, and now he's training to be a doctor. And I was absolutely floored by his presence and his charisma and the way that he would hold a gaze and tell a story. It was so gripping. And I could imagine it being really, really useful in a patient doctor setting.
For sure. And it's, I've trained lots of doctors. I do executive coaching as well. Yeah. So in order to afford my improv habit, I also train some corporate people. But I'm also a cancer survivor. And so I've trained oncologists, I've trained doctors on bedside manner. So it becomes really strange when you see someone who has not been trained by you, who has to talk to you about the cancer that you have, and you want to give them feedback.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's improv skills and my point of view, which is sort of rooted in comedy that, you know, got me through that whole process. But yeah, presence is the idea. It's and its presence isn't a, it's not a can full of something you give someone, but rather it's, you know, are you comfortable in your own skin? Can you authentically be who you are as you relate to a variety of different personalities?
The point about around are you comfortable in your own skin, that is so interesting because I feel like a lot of people aren't.
I think people are conditionally comfortable
right,
in their own skin. And really, who has the need to have this dynamic of comfortability when you interact with a lot of different people? A lot of people, they go to work, they know the different people that they have to interact with. And there's a certain degree of willingness to engage that changes from person to person. And so, and a lot of corporate people that I train, all the way up to C-level people, a lot of them say, I keep my weekend self at home. Mm-hmm. I don't bring my weekend self here. Mm-hmm. And so I say, so then there's a work self and there's a weekend self? Yes. Well, who are you authentically? Well, it depends on if I'm at work.
Yeah.
And so I try to, when I'm coaching people, I try to get to, like, what's the authentic you that is about engaging with, talking with people as opposed to talking at people? In the United States, there's a lot of people that are very skilled at talking at people, which is supported by whatever their title is or office that they happen to reside in. The higher up the corporate ladder you go, the more embedded permission you have to talk at people. And so, good news for me, coaching opportunities. But when you say you've noticed people who walk in and they immediately have a presence, my guess would be that you feel there's some type of connection that they've made with you that's beyond what you experience walking into a shop to order something or, you know, maybe even, you know, with people that you're friends with here at work. There's an elevated sense of connection. Is that fair?
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get into improv in the first place?
The short story is I was in high school. I was a slow reader. And once I learned you didn't have to learn lines sometimes, the lazy part.
Laziness is just a great facilitator, isn't it?
I mean, we call it deliberate. and it's, I also was sort of a contrary child. And so I was told often, you know, quit making things up. And I thought, something doesn't sound right about that. I looked at it as an invitation that I wouldn't accept rather than an order. And so I think as a child, because there was chaos in my family, I think a lot of us that end up in comedy or the performing arts, we develop these neural pathways. I'm also a behavioral neuroscience nerd. Mm-hmm. So I think we develop these neural pathways that give us the capacity to invent an alternate reality.
To deal with the...
Yeah, that's better than the one that we're in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that my family is responsible for me developing that. And then, I mean, 47 years later, I started doing improv, probably like you've seen, like on Whose Line Is It Anyway? Mm. And now I'm here in the Auckland Improv Festival and I'm doing, you know, various improvised plays. I'm performing with different friends from all over the world. And, yeah, it's just, I mean, I'm addicted to it. It's my life now. I'm about to be 62 years old. And I always resented teachers or counselors who said, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? I found that to be ridiculous at a young age. And so, I almost can't remember when I started because it seems like I've always been like this.
How long did it take you to find your true self?
Oh.
In an improv sense, anyway.
Yeah. I think I was 40 years old when I was able to say, I'm an artist.
Right. Wow. Really?
Yeah.
What were you before then?
A
hobbyist?
I was, maybe a hobbyist. I was someone who was trying to extract myself from the hypocrisy, my perceived hypocrisy of my mother and father.
Yeah.
And so, and I had a very domineering father who was very sporty, played American football, and he didn't know. I'm named after him, who's named after his father, who's named after his father, and they all were these big New York, Irish, German you know, Neanderthal, and I just don't have Neanderthal in me. I was a sensitive child. Man.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think, and my mother was a nursery school teacher. So somewhere around 40 years of age, I realized that the nursery school aspect part of me, the inner child, if you will, it was just more valuable and more authentically me than the football extrovert salesman, you know, thing that I was sort of raised to be.
There's a, it's a really interesting point that you make about your father being a big sporty lad's lad.
Yeah.
Here. And, yeah. Because I recall an interview with, I think, Burt Reynolds talking about his father, who I think was along the same lines. Mm-hmm. And Burt Reynolds obviously went down the route of being an actor, but took on a lot of tough guy, big tough guy. I'm the man. I'm the man in building roles. And I remember an interview, I think it was Kim Hill, interviewing Burt Reynolds and putting it to him that maybe a reason that he was taking on those roles was subconsciously to sort of appeal more to his father, all of which is apropos of nothing, really, apart from, you know, maybe the idea that you alluded to earlier, that, you know, the art that we do is maybe almost a coping mechanism or a way to rationalize things that happen in our lives.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I had a therapist that said one of the greatest things to me is that children concern themselves with what they can get. Teenagers concern themselves with what they can prove, and grown-ups concern themselves with what they can give. And I think especially with a domineering father like that, there's this constant demand that you're proving yourself to be something to them, either what they're expecting or that if you're not that, I'm going to prove to you that I'm not this. And Burt Reynolds was a fantastic American football player.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he happened to have a look that was appealing.
Yeah.
And the macho, you know, in Hollywood, once they label you as you're the macho thing, then you're on a surfboard on a wave and you ride that wave as far as you can. And he certainly did.
When somebody goes to a show like yours, you know, your typical Joe Bill show, what does that look like?
Well, one of the things that I teach is, on the one hand, there's comedy is the goal of improvisation, which is sort of the origin story. But I teach comedy as a consequence of connection.
Right.
So I have a number of duo partners that are here and shows that I'm in. And I tend to find the basic platform human experience. We relate as just ordinary people that people can that people in the audience can relate to. And then we're humans. So psychologically, we're funny because at our root, we take ourselves seriously. We don't want to be wrong. We we want to find connection. Half of our brain sees ourselves as alone all the time. And that's the part of our brain that invents words. And half of our brain knows that we're connected, but it doesn't use words. It just wants evidence of our connectivity. And then the part of our brain that uses the words, the engineer brain, if you will, says not until we know that we're safe and we know that we're right and we know who's the boss and all of this other stuff. And so, you know, in the last 25 years, that's what's had me traveling all over the world to develop this theatrical style of improvisation that it can look like a sitcom. It can look like it's like a drama. It can look like a different style. But I was part of the first touring duo in the United States that is just two guys. It was called Bass Prov. I don't know if there's bass fishing here in New Zealand.
Maybe not. I wouldn't be the person to ask.
Okay, fine. But it was so – we both grew up in the same state. It's fairly rural. And we just played two guys that, that were pretending like they were fishing with an actual fishing rod. And as we approached 40, a six-pack of beer between us on stage. And our teacher said, nobody's going to watch you pretend like you're fishing for an hour. And they did. And we ended up touring when improv festivals, this makes me sound ancient, when improv festivals were invented or began in the United States, we headlined everywhere because there was no other act like us. And 3 years into that, we started to have TV stars and movie stars who wanted to sit in the boat with us because it was a different approach to comedy. And we invited them to play a character. We said, nothing's going to be funny for 5 minutes, but you're going to live in this imaginary town. You'll be related to one of us. And just like when you're on a speedboat, it's choppy to begin and then it planes out. That was the metaphor for it. And really, for the last almost 30 years, that's what I've been writing. So when you come at the festival here, There's a lot of different types of stories. We just did a story with a dear friend from Melbourne who did a show called Fat City. So I played in that tonight. I've never seen it before. Right. I've never played it before. And it's basically just relationships in a stylized format that's almost like a graphic novel. I'm playing with a duo partner from Minneapolis named Jill Bernard, and we play three scenes that happen all at the same time, but there's only two of us to play it.
Okay.
And it's all, we're both getting a little, it might be the last time it's ever seen on Earth because it's insane. And then I also, because of what I've been through the last few years, on the 3rd and 4th of May, I'm doing my solo show. I'm debuting my solo show, and we're going to film it at Covert Theater, covertheater.com. Mm-hmm. And it's called Surviving Consciousness. And a lot of the show is just focused on what is it that my brain is made of, that stories from my life experience that helped me get through this. And so, you know, this is the long answer to your question, but it starts with what's your relationship to yourself, which comes back to authenticity, and what's your relationship to yourself as you go through stuff. I'm comfortable in my own skin. Having humor as a coping mechanism, having intellectualization as a coping mechanism. And I think because I have an imagination, even when I went through chemo, on the worst days, I was determined that I will find three funny things today.
Right.
And it became apparent to me as I was going through that like, oh, I have a different mindset than a lot of people because chemo's a bitch. Mm. So did I answer your question?
Very much so. I mean, like, One of the questions that sprang to mind while you were speaking there is, do you ever get scared?
You know what? I was trained to not be scared. And so I think it's, I'm accepting of just, I mean, to be blunt, I'm from a cancer family. So in a way it was, I'm the next one up and I'm not afraid of dying. I'm 62 years old, but I've lived 95 years of experience. Mm. And I have kids, but they're, you know, one's almost fully grown and one's on their way, who lives also on the other side of the world from me. And so if there's any fear, it's that I'm not being enough as a father for them. And on the other hand, I don't think any parent can be everything that they would like to be for their kid. So what I want to do is I want to model independence. I want to model a sense of self-knowing. I have two daughters, so I want them to have a sense of agency. I want them to know who they are. I want them to take up the space that they stand in. And I want them to feel the courage or the audacity to speak up for themselves. And both my daughters are kind of introverts, but they do speak up for themselves. And if that's the only thing that they feel inspired to do because of me, then I've done something right. And then I'll let their therapist later on figure out the rest.
You are doing the Auckland Improv Fest. You're also doing workshops, I think, for improvisers, but also performing your solo show.
Yes.
Can people still get along to either or both of those?
I think there's still tickets for the Auckland Improv Fest, which runs through this weekend till Saturday. And then there's a week off. And then my solo show is at the very beginning of the New Zealand Comedy Fest. So that's May 3rd and 4th at the Covert Theater. And then for 2 weeks following that, there's various acts that are coming through that are from New Zealand and elsewhere, I believe. And I'll be jumping into some shows and hanging out. But it's just – I've been to Australia a few times. This is my first time to New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I have dear friends here that I'm staying with that run the theater, that own the theater. And it's there's just something about this country that it just – it feels better than Australia.
It is.
Okay.
It definitely is.
I love it. And we have an election coming up in November.
Oh, really?
So I'm kind of house shopping. They said my visa's good for 2 years, so how handy is that?
Joe Bill, it's been lovely chatting to you this evening. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me, Emil.
I really enjoyed that.
My pleasure. Great.
That is Joe Bill. Joe is in Aotearoa, New Zealand, for the Auckland Improv Fest, and also has a book coming out. The book is called Surviving Consciousness. So if you enjoyed that chat, that book's definitely worth a shout. Yeah.
the show is Surviving Consciousness.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I thought there was a book as well.
Yeah, the book is going to come out at the end of this year. It's called Maybe It's Your Fault, an improv book.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.